Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm Angie, recovered alcoholic.
Hi,
I'm originally from Dallas, Texas. I've lived in Seal Beach for about 4 months now, but I've been in California for a little over two years. And Capistrano Beach, Dana Point area, beautiful area. I'm really glad to be here, so I thank you all for being here and coming in and giving me your time and attention, and I thank Bob so much for inviting me. Anytime that I get the opportunity to carry the message, to share my story, my experience, I really jump at it because somebody did it for me, and it's my responsibility. It's my responsibility today. How selfish would it be for me just to, you know, sit at home and not carry this message to somebody who really wants it and really needs it and doesn't know how to stop drinking? It's a pleasure, but it's my responsibility too, and it keeps me sober, and that's the best part. It keeps me sober, and it keeps me happy, and it keeps me free, and it keeps me in God's will, and it keeps me out of myself. My sobriety date is March 25th, 2006. I actually sometimes forget it. I have to remind myself every now and then, and that's simply because I love to be able to live life, you know, one day at a time. I get to stay sober for good and all if I continue doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So it's not really about quantity, how many years I have, how many, I don't care. It's really about quality. It's really about quality of sobriety. My sobriety date, March 25th, 2006. My original home group is the Primary Purpose Group in Dallas, Texas. And my other home group is the Primary Purpose Group in Laguna Niguel. We have a big book study every Thursday night at 7:30. It's for 1 hour, and we study the book. And we welcome newcomers, and we're really there for them. We're there for them to go through the book, give them some hope, talk about these steps. How we got better. We talk about the solution. We want to share with people how we got better, not how crappy our day's going and how we're fighting with our husband and how angry we are, how dishonest we've been. The book talks about all that, and so we can refer to the book where it talks about resentments and all that. So that's where we go with that, and it's helpful to everybody, and it's a really good group of people. It's a good group of free people that are living in the solution, and it's a really cool deal. I invite you guys out anytime you're out in that area. I am a big book thumper, and I'm proud to say it. People used and I guess maybe still do, make fun of big book thumpers. And today I can honestly say it might be the nicest compliment I've ever had. I think, you know, when I hear the word thumper, I think of a rabbit. I really do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. I like to maybe say I'm a big book student, enthusiast, lover. But, you know, I'll take thumper. That's fine. I'm very proud to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous today. I can remember a time when I was so embarrassed to be an alcoholic because I thought that we were weird. I thought we had a problem that we couldn't control, and can't everybody control their problems to some point, you know? And I was embarrassed. I didn't want to tell anybody. And today I can honestly say it is the most fantastic thing that's ever happened in my life. And I am happy to be an alcoholic today. And I used to hear people say that all the time. And I thought, there's no way you could be happy to be an alcoholic. But I found a solution today that solves all my problems when I couldn't handle a single problem. I am going to share some of my story with you. I want to tell you guys what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. But telling you what I was like isn't going to take long, because if you're anything like you're anything like I was, a real alcoholic, I was a selfish, self-centered, dishonest, full of fear, useless, no direction, scared, lost person. Lied all the time, stole. I didn't start out that way, but I got pretty sick. I came from a very good family. There wasn't a lot of tragedy or childhood trauma. And that just goes to show that we don't have to be from horrible dysfunction. Well, everybody's family is going to be dysfunctional in a way. There was divorce in my family. There was some drug problems amongst my family. But, you know, it was just stuff. And kids fought and, you know, typical. I'm the youngest of four. And I was pretty much a spoiled little kid and got my way. And if I didn't, knew how to get it. But I'm the only alcoholic in my family. I didn't grow up with anybody in my family drinking, which might be kind of unusual. Normally there's one somewhere, and I think on my family tree way up, there's gotta be. I've gotta have grandparents that were, or great-great-grandparents. But the fact is, I am one, and it doesn't matter how I got this thing. I got it. I didn't start drinking. I think I had my first beer when I was like 16, or no, 13. And I split that beer with like, I don't know, 7 or 8 other girls at a slumber party. And we had like 1.5 sips each, and we just thought it was great. But then it was over, and it's not like I had found my solution. It was just, you know, no big deal. I drank a little bit at 16, just your regular partying a little bit in high school. Maybe stepped it up a bit when I was 18, 20, and then into the college years, although I say that, but I didn't really go to college. I started a lot and stopped and started again, I think maybe 6 times. You know, I always thought it was around that age, around 18, 19, 20, for some, I was always a pretty confident kid. Had friends, you know, did okay in school. But around that age, I started getting real fearful, uncomfortable, nervous, not really knowing what I wanted to do with my life, which not many people do at that age. That's not that bizarre. But I just started feeling just not right, uncomfortable, and I needed something to chill out. And I started drinking a little bit more, and it worked. Scared, not being real confident in carrying a conversation with you. I had a few drinks. Shoot, I could talk all night long. Get me on the dance floor after 2 drinks and I'm good. I thought I was. It worked, and so I kept doing it. I mean, that's what we do. We drink, and it works for us. That's why we keep doing it. It's our solution for a long, long time. Still wasn't out of control. Didn't think I had a problem. I thought I was partying. I thought I'm just having a good time, getting drunk maybe a little bit more than most of my friends and stuff, not really knowing when to stop when they do. I just like to party a little bit more. I just have a little bit harder time saying no. That's really all it is. But then I start doing the weird stuff, like kind of hiding it, having a few drinks before we go out just so I can go out, just so I can kind of get up the courage to go. I lived alone and I'm hiding it. That's kind of a big sign. I just felt better. I felt good in my own skin when I was drinking. But then, yes, it did start to cause problems. Surprise, surprise, that's what happens. DWI here. So after that first DWI, I am sent to Alcoholics Anonymous for punishment, and I thought it was a big joke. You know, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't drink in the mornings yet at this point. I'm not drinking around the clock. I'm having a few blackouts here and there, but like I said, it's just not, I'm 23, you know, I'm 22, 23. I'm in college. on a break maybe at that point. But I'm getting jobs, but I'm so hungover that I wasn't one of these people that could wake up in the morning and toughen it out and go to the job anyway. I just was pretty much like, screw it. Screw it. I'll get another job. You know, I had maybe 20 waitress jobs in 1 year. You know, there's restaurants everywhere. I'm sure they're used to this. They'll take me back. Or somebody will take me. I'm dating losers, so I'm kind of blaming my drinking on them. You know, if I just kind of get away from them, I wouldn't want to drink so much. Yeah, and you know, that didn't really work. People are starting to get a little bit touchy with my drinking. You know, maybe you should look at that, Ange. And once again, I'm not an alcoholic. Alcoholics are, you know, they get drunk and they hit people. You know, they get drunk and they get in fights. They pass out in the streets, and I'm just not doing that at this point. So my point is, I didn't understand what an alcoholic even was. Thank God for this book. It explains it beautifully. Sent to AA for punishment. And I don't belong. I just don't relate. And I go into this meeting and this group, and I do hear a bunch of problems and whining. And I don't really hear a lot of how to get better. I'm not too concerned about it because I'm just there to get my court card signed. But that's what I think AA is you go in there and you talk about your problems. And it's like therapy. That's what I kind of think it is. And I'm like, I feel sorry for these people that these people have to do this for the rest of their lives. Thank God I'm not an alcoholic. Well, at this point, I'm dating someone that I later marry, and that's causing problems, and I'm causing the problems, and I think, well, I just will get married. I did love him, of course, do love him, but I thought that getting married would fix me too. In other words, I'm looking for all these outside fixes. I've moved a lot. I've you know, changed my outside circumstances, tried to fix my outside stuff, trying to think that if I was just, you know, had the better job, had I'd get married, I wouldn't want to drink. I'd be so happy, you know. We'll start a family, and got married, and it really didn't. And he knew I was having a problem with drinking. Got married, and it really didn't solve anything. I get another DWI, and I start going back to AA. Same thing, not hearing much solution. And I don't really know what this big book is. I see it kind of scattered around the room. I see it, but I don't, you know, it really doesn't mean anything to me. I see the steps on the wall and all that stuff. I get a sponsor because I'm supposed to. She says that we are going to take our time with these steps, work them slow, and I'm like, that's fine with me because I really don't need to anyway. I'm really just here because I'm told to be. Well, time goes on, things get worse, and I see that I do need to look at my drinking a little bit. I'm getting scared. I'm getting really scared, and I am drinking in the mornings now. And I am getting drunk when my husband leaves to go on business trips, and I'm getting drunk when he goes to play golf. I figured out that golf is a four-hour game. Give him 30 minutes to get there, 30 minutes to get back. I've got a five-hour party by myself. By myself. I had stopped going to parties and bars and stuff because I knew I wasn't going to make it home. I knew that I could possibly wake up in Detroit or something in a couple days, and I knew I didn't know anybody in Detroit, so I started just staying at home and literally closet drinker. Going back to AA, I'm starting to notice I do relate to these people, not completely, but a little bit. I haven't worked any steps yet. This is like maybe over like a 2-year period. I'm just going to get that court card thing signed again. And I know that I've got something going on, but I still don't know what it means to be an alcoholic. Nobody's telling me. I'm hearing an awful lot about this person's divorce, and I'm hearing an awful lot about all these other people's issues, but I'm not hearing about anything about alcoholism, internal condition, spiritual malady. I'm just not. I know that because I know, because later on I did, and I'm like, gosh, I was in AA for 7 years and I had no clue. That's why this is a big part of my story, guys. I was in AA for 7 years, in and out, chronically relapsing, going back and getting desired chips, and then I finally heard the truth of it. Was introduced to this book, and I got through the steps quickly, and I've got experience after it. So that's why my emphasis on this is just my story. It's just my experience. It could be totally different from yours, but this is why my emphasis is on, the whole meeting makers make it kind of middle of the road. It works for you guys, great. It just didn't work for me, and that's my experience. I become a nanny. I do not like kids, but it's a job. And it's a job where these parents travel a lot, and I can drink. They're gone 4 days in a row, and the kids are kind of older, and I can absolutely drink on this job, and it's kind of cool. They're wealthy, and so I am still having stuff happen to me, not real fortunate stuff, but I'm trying to hide it, and I'm trying to play it cool. I'm going to share with you a few big light bulb kind of moments in my experience, and then I'm going to move on to how I got better. But I was a nanny. It was midnight one night. I've been working for them for a couple of years. Don't know how I lasted that long. Called in sick a lot. I woke up at about midnight on there, and I guess I'm about 27. I woke up at about midnight on the parents' master bedroom floor, and it was all dark, and I did not know where any of the four kids were. And I freak out. Where are these children? Where are these children? The oldest one's not home. The younger ones aren't home. And I start looking around the house, and I run up the stairs, and I'm looking in closets because I'm thinking maybe one of them saw me passed out, and they got scared, and they're hiding in the closet. I mean, my mind is just going crazy. I finally realize I'm screwed. I'm gotta find out what's going on. So I call the oldest one and I tell him, I just fess up. I'm drunk. I just woke up. I don't know where your brothers and sister are. I need help. And he began to tell me, you don't remember at 10 o'clock this morning going and picking up Ellie and taking her to Sarah's house. And then taking them ice skating and then picking. And he goes through this entire day long of events that I did. I took the kids to the airport to meet their parents for about an hour because they had a layover. And I hung out for an hour. All this stuff that I did, I don't remember one bit of it. Not one bit of it. Now, I drove around drunk with these kids a lot. Embarrassed to say, but I did. I absolutely did. And thank God never hurt them, and thank God never hurt anybody else. But I didn't remember any of this stuff, and of course I lost that job. And how selfish of me, because I remember I was mad that I lost that job, that I didn't get to explain. I was mad that I didn't get a paycheck, and that because I did spend the 3 days. It was so selfish of me. But anyway, the kids were okay. They were fine, but it really woke me up to, this is not a joke. This is not a joke at all. And I had my husband come and pick me up, and I went back to AA. And I still can't stay sober because I don't know what to do. I do have a sponsor, but we're not working any steps because they're telling me, just don't drink in between meetings. Just don't drink, no matter what. And I remember thinking back then, and I know now, if I could do that, how do you do that? How do you not drink in between meetings? How do you just not? It's a great idea. I wish it worked. Hallelujah if that worked, if that was a solution. We'd all be, we wouldn't need AA, And I was hearing you know, you go to a meeting every day. And if that's not enough, you go to two a day. You go early. You hang out. And I think that's important. I think the fellowship is very important. But I think in that meeting, we need to also be hearing the solution. I was getting desire chip after desire chip. And I was sober for maybe 4 or 5 days. And then I was drinking again. And then I'm going back in and I'm getting another one. And then I'm going to a different group because I'm too embarrassed to go back there and get my ninth desire chip. So I'm gonna switch groups. So I'm going all around the Dallas area. And I just can't stay sober. And so finally, I just basically say, screw AA. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. I am making meetings. You know, meeting makers make it. I'm making meetings, and I am not making it. I'm not making it. I try my own thing for a while. I try reading self-help books. I try therapy. I try moving again. I try counseling. I watch Dr. Phil a lot. I mean, I'm doing everything. I was a serious self-help book reader. I tried rational recovery. I tried anything, and I was hot on that. I was like, oh my God, this is it, and you know, a month later, I'm drunk. But I'm getting so bad, I'm drinking cooking sherry and red wine vinegar because it's the only thing in the house, and I am sneaking into my neighbor's house at 7 o'clock in the morning through the doggy door because I need that beer. I'm not drinking to party anymore. I'm drinking because I need it. I need it because I'm going to freak out and shake if I don't have one in like 7 minutes, if I don't have alcohol in my body soon. As I said before, husband would go leave. He'd come home. I'd be drunk. Every time he would ask me, what happened this time? And I would always have an excuse. Well, Grandma Martha called. And she's really unhappy, and she's lonely, and her back is hurting, and it really upset me, and it made me sad, and so I drank. I had an excuse every single time, and the thing is, I really believe that stuff. I really believe that that's why I was drinking. Somebody made me mad. This happened. The truth is, I drank no matter what happened. I mean, you can think in your mind the times that you had everything going for you, and everything was great. It's a great reason to drink. When things are terrible, the man's leaving, the kids are, you got no money, lost your job, it's a great reason to drink. We'd lost the power of choice, but I had no clue. I had an excuse every time. Finally, he came home one night, and I'm drunk on the stairs and barely any clothes laying on the staircase, and he says, what happened this time? He's mad, you know, he's sick of it. Bless his heart, he stuck by me. What happened this time? And I looked at him and I said, I don't know. Nothing happened. I drink because I drink. I drink because I drank yesterday. I drink because I have a problem. I drink because I can't stop. I drink because I don't know how to stop. AA is telling me just don't drink no matter what to put the plug in the jug. How do you do that? How do you, if I could do that, believe me, I would have done that. Still going to AA, jumping around. I'm relapsing so much, my sponsor says, well, you're obviously not getting step one because we've been on it for 40 days. And you're relapsed, so you're not getting it. So we're going to spend even longer on it. We're going to spend more time on it because you're not understanding it. What I needed to do was move along. Am I powerless? Well, I need to understand what that means. I thought it meant that I just liked to drink and had a hard time saying no, and that's not what it means. It gets to a point where I'm going on like 14, 15-day drinking binges. And, you know, I've got alcohol in shampoo bottles and, I'm hiding beer in the doghouse and the attic and everywhere, the dryer. And my husband's parents come over and they it's like an intervention. The night before, my husband says, they're going to be here at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning and we're going to get you some help. And I'm drunk and I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever, that's great. sounds wonderful. The next morning comes, and they do show up, and they are trying to talk me into going to treatment. And I am absolutely no way, because that's what really messed up people have to do. And I'm not doing that, although it is the only thing I haven't tried. They will not leave until I say yes. And they are reading the paper, and they're cooking breakfast, and I'm sneaking off to the garage and the laundry room to drink, and I'm like, they can stay all day. I'm not going anywhere. I don't really know how I ended up saying yes, but I knew, I can think I just got drunk enough, to be honest with you. I didn't know what I was saying. But I really do believe that God stepped in right there and kind of said yes for me. Because the next thing I knew, I'm walking to the sidewalk, going to the car. I'm a lot older at this point, and I've got a pillow under this arm, and I've got a stuffed animal. I'm in my 30s. I've got it under my arm, and I can't hardly walk, and my in-laws are walking me to the car. And I look back now, and I think that's probably a real pathetic sight. So, it's probably a real sad sight. I was 34. But I was allowed to drink on the way to treatment, and that was the deal. That was, you know, but I really needed it. I did. I needed it in my body. I to cut me off would have been probably a dangerous thing. I got to treatment. I for the first time heard the truth about alcoholism, and a wonderful man there gave me this book, this big book. He's a very tall Texas boy, cowboy, and he took me to page 24, where it tells me I've lost the power of choice, and I understood that. Finally, I understood that. Got to read it, because it's my truth. It says, the fact is that Angie, for most, well, I took most alcoholics out and put my name in there because it fits so perfect. That Angie, for reasons yet obscure, has lost the power of choice in drink. So anybody that says I'm Bob and I'm an alcoholic and I chose not to drink today, I don't know what he's doing in AA, because I didn't have a choice. If you have a choice, great, you don't need to be here. But if you've lost that power of choice and you drink no matter what, as my book, big book says, welcome to AA. Angie's so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. So tell me, in black and white, it's not about willpower. And God bless our loved ones, non-alcoholics, who they have the best intention. Just get stronger. Just have more willpower. Bless their hearts. They don't understand. And they never will, and they don't have to. But it's not about willpower. If it was, we would have practiced our willpower a long time ago. It says we're unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. When this wonderful man is explaining this to me, I'm understanding it. It says, at certain times, I'm not going to be able to remember with the kind of force I need to. That mental obsession, I'm not going to remember with the kind of force that I need to keep me away from that drink again. When I get through a detox and I start feeling a little bit better and a week goes by and I look better and people are forgiving me and life is okay and, yeah, that pink cloud we hear, I call it God's grace, not a pink cloud. I have a very short amount of time before that obsession to drink is going to start after me again. I remember getting a DWI. I remember waking up in jail. I remember how horrible it was and how bad it smelled. And I had a roll of toilet paper I was using for a pillow behind. I remember all that stuff. What am I doing 3 weeks later? I am drinking and driving again. Arrested again, same story. What am I doing 2 months later? Drinking and driving again. I couldn't remember with the kind of force, and that obsession has come back. I haven't done any work. I haven't done any steps to deal with this internal condition that's going on. I haven't done anything. I need a psychic change. I haven't done anything to get there. All I'm doing is going to meetings. I understood that when this guy is saying this to me. That's me. That's what I do. I learned about steps 1, 2, and 3. I learned that, you know, this book uses words like next and at once and now and immediately. And at once we launched into a course of vigorous action. That translates to me as now. It doesn't mean we take our time. I didn't have time to work these steps. I was going to die from drinking. That obsession was going to kick my rear. That little bitty window of time, I needed to get well during in that little bitty window of time. So these people had the best intentions, and maybe it worked for them. But the thing is, the newcomer coming in that doesn't have a lot of time, that might not work for them. Y'all get what I'm saying? If we follow the book, which says we do it in a timely manner, steps thoroughly, yes, but we do them, you know, let's get going, let's get well. I'm just concerned about the new person coming in, and if we're telling them to take their time and don't rush, and you want to make sure, it's like, oh my God, I'm sure. How much more ready could I be? I'm going to die. I'm just afraid that we tell them that obsession is just going to get worse, and they're going to, and that's why we have. That's why we can get people in here, but we can't really get them to stay. I don't believe personally that we are following the book as we should, getting through these steps in a time, getting people well so they can go help other people, so they can recover and go help other people. I know I'm kind of jumping around a lot, but all of a sudden I got this big, there's so much I want to share. I know I don't have much time. I had taken my time working these steps, and it hadn't worked for me. So when I heard this man telling me this truth and this stuff about this book, and he told me about the doctor's opinion and this physical allergy I had and this mental obsession and the spiritual malady and that the real problem centers in my mind and not my body, I was like, oh my God, I've never heard this stuff, and I've been in this program for a long ass time. I got out of treatment. I was told to go to this group that carries the message. They sponsor people. They study the book. They're about getting recovered. Getting recovered and getting out there and helping other people. They're happy. They're free. They're meeting before the meeting and after the meeting, and they're going to all these hospitals and they're carrying the message. I wanted to recover. Not cured. I wanted to recover, and my book tells me that I get to recover. I don't want to be sick all my life. I'm not sick anymore. All that recovered means, and my book tells me. So, y'all don't like that word, that's fine, but argue with the book, not me. Sorry. Yeah, the forward to the first edition, it says, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Nearly all have recovered on page 17. I'm not going to go through them all since I don't have a whole lot of time. You get the point. We have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body on page 20. On page 29, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. What that means is been restored to sanity. We take these steps, we get connected to a power that's going to keep us sober. We get connected to a power greater than ourselves, because I'm truly powerless. And in that process, get connected to that power, work these steps, make these amends, have that obsession removed. Have it removed. There are 10-step promises in here, and I'm going to read them in a second. Not just not drinking and thinking about booze and wanting to drink and just going to meetings and just one day at a time, and I'm just not going to drink today and I'm going to go to a meeting, and then I'm just not going to drink tomorrow and I'm going to go to a meeting. I mean getting well, restored to sanity. And then getting off my butt and going out there and carrying the message and helping other people. And that's what's going to help me remain sober. These 10-step promises, and I hope that this gives... I totally just stopped my story somewhere. But these 10-step promises that hopefully are going to give a lot of hope to the newcomers. It says on page 84, We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we find that this has happened automatically. We will see, with working these steps, we will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn it off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid, and that's our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels, and we're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe, for we're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. If I keep doing what I'm doing, if I stay connected to God, if I keep helping others, basically trusting God, cleaning house, and working with others, I'm going to stay good, and I'm going to stay recovered. Can I get sick again? Yes. I've done it. I have living proof that you can get sick again. I was full of fear and didn't want to, believe it or not, speak. And I told my sponsor, I'm going to get away without having to do that. I'm going to get away without having to help anybody. I'm just going to not drink and I'll be good. Full of fear, dishonest, quit talking to God, drunk again. And now I'm here. Now I can't stop. Hopefully that gives hope. Yes, we do get to recover. But we're not cured. I am an alcoholic. I will die an alcoholic. This, basically my story, okay, I went to treatment, I came back, I came out, I got a sponsor who got me through these steps in a timely fashion. She took me to page 44 and she asked me those two questions to qualify me as an alcoholic. Never in my experience in AA had anybody taken me aside and qualified me as an alcoholic to make sure I'm supposed to be there. Can I control my drink? Can I stop and stay stopped? Can I make the decision to stop and pull it off? No. Can I control the amount I drink once I start? No. She told me, welcome. She asked me if I was done. Was I done? Not one day at a time, for good and all. We get to live life one day at a time. That's what my book says. It doesn't say we stay sober one day at a time. Yeah, okay, I'm done. Are you willing to work these steps now? And get honest. Yeah. We're doing 1, 2, and 3 tomorrow. Bring your book. Did 1, 2, and 3 in one day, got on my knees, said that prayer. Did I understand everything at that point? No. But I was going to die if I didn't get moving. Did that 4-step in 1 week, got to recover and get better and got to get off my nice little hiney and go help other people, which is the entire purpose of this program. And I want to read something. I actually printed it on a piece of paper because just so I'm not flipping everywhere in the book. Our primary purpose, it's not just to not drink. It was in the beginning. I don't want to drink anymore because my life is, you know, it's causing me problems and it's no fun and I'm going to die. But I have a purpose today. And I believe every single one of us in here do. I think that's why we're sitting in here. I think that's why we're still alive today. We're miracles. We're miracles. And my book tells me what my primary purpose is. On page XVI, it says he suddenly realized that in order to save himself, he must carry his message to other alcoholics. Page XVII, it also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic to another, was vital to permanent recovery. Permanent recovery. Page XXV, as part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must do likewise. Page 14, particularly was it imperative to work with other alcoholics as he had worked with me. Page 15, if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Page 15, I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Work with another alcoholic would save the day. When shit's going on in my life, I need to get out of myself and go work with an alcoholic. Not, I need a meeting, I need a meeting. I need to go work with another alcoholic. if I've worked through these steps and I have something to offer them. There's more. I'm not going to really go on. There's lots more. One more. Page 89, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. So if this is our primary purpose, and if back in the day when the success rate in AA was 75%, and that's how they did it back then, they got through these steps in a timely fashion, and Ebby is sponsoring and helping Bill at 2 months sober. He's doing 12-step work, and Bill is doing it at 10 days sober. And wouldn't it make sense that we follow what they did if these people recovered so we can get on with our life, so we don't have to spend our life in a meeting? Don't get me wrong. Meetings are good. I think good meetings are good. I think they're important. I think the fellowship's important. I think they're important to be there for the newcomer. But we've got a lot of time wasting in our meetings because, believe it or not, the newcomer really doesn't care about our stuff going on. They want to know, how am I going to leave this meeting and not go get lit? Because I was that person for years. So if that's the point, if that's the point of AA is to get well, recover so we can help others, do it the way the book says. We won't confuse people. Opinions don't get in. People's ideas. I did not get sober on anybody's opinions and ideas. I encourage us to make that effort to do that, to get back to the real program, because it's been watered down over the years big time. I want to thank very much the women that I sponsor, actually, being here to support me, but also the ones that it is such a blessing, and they help me so much. And it's amazing to be able to watch somebody change before your eyes and watch these women become useful, hopeful, full of life, want to be a part of life, make really great decisions. And I'm calling them now with 10-step stuff, and it's awesome. It's awesome. And they're referring me back to the book and what the book says about this stuff, and it's fantastic, you know. I thank you for listening. I thank you for just the opportunity, you know. And if I've given anybody a little bit of hope in this room, it is an awesome day, and that is my absolutely only purpose. Just to give a little bit of hope, like somebody did me. So thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.